Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Fast Track Podcast. In this episode, I will have a special guest from Singapore, Dennis Tan. So Dennis is a full-time realtor based in Singapore over the last 10 years, helping young parents and professionals navigate the real estate market. So welcome to Fast Track Podcast, Dennis. I think it's better that I give the mic to you. You can make a better introduction about yourself and tell the audience about who you are. What do you do and what you specialize in?
Okay, so basically, I've been a real estate agent in Singapore for the last 11 years. Is it 10 to 11 years? I've been mainly focusing on young parents as well as millennials to getting their first property. Okay, a lot of them are unsure what to do, what kind of properties to look at, whether to focus on capital appreciation or for yield. So essentially, for me, I help them to with analysis to show them, hey, which type of property they can probably consider. And a lot of my clients actually want to upgrade from like a smaller house to something bigger. Let's say they are when their family needs change.
And just to start with the first question, because many of the audience might not locate in Singapore, but they're interested in investing in real estate properties in different countries. So the first question is, can foreigners buy in Singapore?
Oh, definitely. Foreigners can buy in Singapore. What happens is that essentially, right, there is three segments of housing. Public housing, foreigners are not eligible to buy. Landed properties, foreigners are not able to buy. So a lot of foreigners end up choosing condominiums instead. So these condominiums essentially, right, their foreigners are eligible to buy, but there's a 60% tax that the government has recently come up in April, okay, that's levied onto foreigners. That come from all over the world. Okay, if they want to purchase, it's 60% additional buyer stamp duty.
This, I want to add a little bit information to audience coming from, I think, Norway, Switzerland, maybe the US as well. There are a few countries that signed kind of like a tax treaty or agreement with Singapore. So when they buy the condo in Singapore, the first one, they are treated as a local citizen. I think the first property is zero tax. Is that so?
Okay, so basically these are foreigners who come from, they are nationals and permanent residents of Iceland, Liechtenstein, Norway, Switzerland, as well as the US. So these five countries, okay, essentially foreigners from these five countries, they'll be exempted because we actually have a tax treaty, okay, between both countries. And if they purchase a property in Singapore, they'll be only subjected to the normal average buyer stamp duty that all Singaporeans pay. So they don't have to pay this additional 60% ABSD tax.
Yeah, this is pretty awesome news to investors in these countries.
That's right, that's right. In fact, the most recent news, we actually saw that US citizens and PRs are now even, they're even more than the Chinese investors in Singapore now. So the US citizens and all that have overtaken the number of Chinese investors in Singapore.
So even PRs can buy without additional tax, permanent residence in those countries.
Okay, permanent residents for and nationals from, okay, wait. Nationals of Iceland, Liechtenstein, Norway, or Switzerland, and nationals of the US.
Nationals, okay.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
can you give
Let's
us
say they are PRs. PRs, then only Iceland, Liechtenstein, Norway, and Switzerland.
Oh, okay.
That's right.
And can you give us an overview of the real estate market in Singapore?
What kind of overview do you want? As in, you want me to tell you about the.
Oh, sorry, this is a big question. Like, for example, someone is interested in property investment in different countries. But they have no idea about if Singapore is a good market to invest and how is the market doing? Is it worth investing? Is it interesting to look at?
Okay, so actually, Singapore real estate itself, especially for the private residential, which foreigners can buy, has gone up by about, over the last, 20 years, 20, 30 years, it's gone up by easily 186%. So essentially, over the long-term trend in Singapore, due to the inflation as well as cost of living, property price has also slowly been climbing over the years steadily.
What would be the average per square meter or per square feet price 10 years ago versus today? Do you have that number?
Okay, yes, I do. I actually have a spreadsheet chart. Wait, let me just see. Okay, Just to give you some context, okay, let's say a couple of years ago in year 2000, which one do you want me to use? Okay, you want me to use 1995 or should I use something a bit more recent?
Yeah, a little bit more
2003.
recent, yeah.
Okay, so per square foot pricing, right, in 2003, okay, that's just about 20 years back, okay, has been ranging about 600. Okay, 600 per square foot. And this is, I'm talking about condominiums, which foreigners can buy. However, today, okay, the average of most of these condominiums range around 1,008 to 1,009 per square feet.
Per square feet to per square meter times 10 times 11, like that.
Okay, so that would be, okay, that would mean it used to be about, okay, let's say times 10, okay? It used to be 6,000 per square meter, and now it's about 18,000 to 19,000 per square meter.
Wow. Okay.
That's
Crazy.
right. Yes. And this is just within a span of 20 years. Yeah. And houses have also gotten smaller. In fact, a lot of the new condos, they are in further places. Okay, in Singapore, there's three different areas that you can buy. Okay, maybe I'll just do a bit of education or facts. That the core central region, which is like Orchard Road and where most of the tourists or most people know Singapore for, that's the core central area, like Raffles Place, downtown core. And then there's rest of core region, okay, which is surrounding the core region, okay, and then there's the outside of core region. So those that within the core region itself, okay, those are the most expensive houses. Those include like Orchard Road, Newton, and all that. So most foreigners tend to buy within the core region itself because it's closer to the city and all, but those tend to be the most expensive. And now those houses that are in the outside of core region are also trending around 2,000 or 2,100 per square feet, or about 22,000 per square meter.
Wow.
Even in Jurong, places like Jurong and all, which is a suburban area.
And in Singapore, there are three types of housing you mentioned before, right? Can you give us a brief overview about what are the differences, so that the audience understand that? Yeah.
Okay, great. Okay, so there's public housing, which foreigners are not allowed to buy. Unfortunately, these are built by the government. 80% of people actually purchase and stay in them. Okay, so the rest of the 20% will make up landed property. These are very coveted houses that you can have your own garage, you can park inside or outside of your unit. So it's essentially like a three-story house, okay, that has its own backyard and all, okay. So these are landed properties that foreigners also cannot buy. So most foreigners can only buy condominiums, which is apartments.
Okay, and can you describe what is the difference between a condominium versus a HDB?
Oh, okay. So basically, condominium and HDB, HDBs are essentially public housing. Okay, unlike in maybe Europe and all that, where these are catered to low income, public housing is open to everyone to apply, but there are just certain criteria because they are aiming to have affordable housing for most Singaporeans. So you need to be within a certain income limit before you can buy a public housing flat.
And would the quality of the apartment also differ?
And okay, the difference mainly is on facilities. Okay, so essentially, condos are a gated community. They tend to have a security guard. They tend to have a gymnasium inside the facility itself. They also tend to have a pool in the compound as well. Whereas for HDBs, they do not have it. Usually, they only have like the newer HDBs, they tend to have like a supermarket and all. But the older ones, they do not have amenities like a pool, a swimming pool or whatever. So only condominiums have this kind of gated, this kind of amenities within a gated community.
I think most of foreigners I met, they were so surprised that in Singapore, like, oh, well, when I was living there, I have a pool, or my friend was living there, there's a pool. People are really impressed that, like, you have literally a nice swimming pool downstairs. And I think that's the condominium, right?
Yes, that's right. Like my German tenant, she told me that every weekend she would just go down by the pool to suntan and chill. Like she said that was her favorite activity. And she says she doesn't get that back in Germany.
Yeah, correct. Now we're entering the winter season, autumn, winter, very cold, very wet. In Singapore, it's like nice weather all year long. So you can literally go swimming pretty much every day if you want.
It's very hot now, actually. I'm sweating all the time, actually. Yeah,
So
the web,
what?
I mean global warming, global warming.
How many temperatures there?
I think today is like, wait, let me see. Singapore temperature today. Singapore
30 or?
temperature. I think now it's like 31. Yeah,
Wow,
it's
okay.
pretty hot. It's pretty hot. Yeah, I would prefer to be in Switzerland,
Yeah, right
honestly.
now here is I think 21. Yeah, later will be 24, 25. It's pretty nice.
Oh man, it's so nice. I love the
Yeah.
weather.
Previously, you talk about like your German tenant, so you have a rental property, right? So then can you tell us about the rental market in Singapore? Is it profitable? Is it worth investing in rental property in Singapore? What are some of the restrictions if foreigners want to buy a rental property?
Okay, the rental market actually surprised, if you have Google online, in fact everywhere, has actually gone up by about 20 or 30% during COVID itself. Yep, because during COVID itself, the government, there was a lot of restriction, people couldn't come into work, but once they opened up the borders, a lot more foreigners and expats were coming in, so that's why the rental market actually shot up by a lot.
How would you say
And
would be the expected rental yield on
I would
average?
say now with the increase, okay, the average yield that most landlords, especially those in the core central area, they can probably expect like between 4 to 5%, as high as 4 to 5%. It used to be much lower. It used to be like maybe 3% to sub fours, that kind, but now it's all above, it's all 4 point something to close to five. Yeah.
Okay. When people rent out their apartments, are there is there any restrictions? For example, in Europe, maybe in certain countries, that if you rent it out to tenants, then you cannot increase your rent too much, or you cannot let your tenants, you know, ask them to move out if the contract is this unlimited contract. Or there are any Yeah, there were many other restrictions that is either protecting the tenants or regulate the rental market.
Okay, people did call for like a rental market control previously because the rents were going out of it was going out of whack. A lot of tenants have put on TikTok that they were getting kicked out and things like that. This was like the rents almost doubled. Like at the condo that I was staying at previously, it almost doubled. I was paying 3,200, and then recently I saw that they're asking for the same size, 5,500.
Wow. So basically, in Singapore, landlord can increase the rent if they want. There's no.
That's right.
Okay.
There's no law, there's no restriction. They can just increase based on the market rate if they want to. So essentially it's a free market for landlords itself. But of course, if you put higher, it's really dependent on, you know, what kind of tenants you want to rent to. Yeah, I mean, then it will depend like on market supply, as in demand and supply,
Yeah.
whether they accept the type of rent you're calling for.
When the landlord rent out the apartment, do they do a strict protocol? And then when the tenants return the apartment and everything has to be exactly the same as before, otherwise they have to pay additional, or it's expected that oh, there will be some damage and that's where it is like this.
Okay, there's definitely expected to be some damage. We call it like minor wear and tear. So essentially, right, there will be some you know, allowances, some leeway that okay, some parts may have worn out and things like that. Maybe like the cupboard doors or something, you know, when you open and close quite frequently. But if it's damaged, then of course the tenant may have to pay to get it repaired.
Okay, because the first time when I was renting in Switzerland, I was pretty shocked because I rented in Singapore for many years, and then when I
Yep.
came to Switzerland, first they have to do a protocol overall. Even there's like gray patches on the wall, they would take a picture, record it, or the cabinet. There's an oil over time with cooking, and the oil eats into the cabinet. It's just like a small part, right? They have to record it. And then when I move out, they check exactly every single thing has to be the same as the condition when I move in. If something there's extra, like there's a hole on the wall, something I didn't clean, they will deduct it from deposit or I have to pay for it. So I was pretty shocked that it was so strict.
Oh wow, that's really strict. I mean, like in Singapore, when I help my clients check such apartments, I'll tell them there will be some minor wear and tear. Okay, so you can't expect like a perfect condition. You know, why rent it out in the same in the first place if you want to get back the same thing, right? I mean, you have to expect that definitely there'll be some minor wear and tear, depending also on like how old the property is. So let's say the older the property, the more it will have this kind of wear and tear that happens in the apartment due to age.
Yeah, okay, I understand, right. And in Singapore, besides the rent, the tenant has to pay, do they also pay themselves the condo fees? I guess there's some management for to maintain the facilities and like water, electricity. What are the fees that are paid by tenants? What are the fees paid by the landlord?
Okay, tenants will need to cover anything that pertains to their own living. Okay, so that would be like water. I mean, they have to pay for their water supply, they have to pay for electricity, they have to pay for their internet, basically these three that are most important: gas, water supply, as well as electricity and Wi-Fi. Okay, so landlords pay for maintenance as well as the property tax on the property itself.
Property tax, how much is
Yes.
it in Singapore?
Actually, it's gone up by a lot. Okay, so a lot of the landlords, I mean, like yesterday I was just speaking to a client investor. Her property tax per month for renting out a place in Bugis is already about 1,000 a month.
Wow.
Yeah,
Just
as in, yeah, just renting it out, because essentially the government is taxing. It's like a Robin Hood tax. They want to tax on people who are earning money from renting, from rental.
Then what would be the rent or the valuation of the apartment in order to qualify 1,000 per month tax?
Okay, she was renting out about 6 or 7 thousand. So basically, right, they go by the annual value, the AV of the property. So basically, they'll assess like what is the annual value of the property. The easiest way to take the rent times 12. So she was collecting about 6,000 per month. So that would be a 72,000 rent per year. And from what we checked based on the table, she should be paying about 1,000 or 1,002 as
Wow.
property tax every month. Yeah, that's an expense that, you know, landlords will have to take note.
Okay, so landlord needs to pay the property tax, condo management fee, anything else the landlord
Yep.
needs to pay?
Mainly the property tax, okay, maintenance fees. Just those two. Those are the most important. Those are the key
I guess.
fees that they have to pay.
And then they have to pay income tax on the rental income, right?
Yep, they also have to do that. Yeah, so they have to pay income tax on whatever they receive.
What are the most desirable properties for local buyers? And what are the most desirable properties for international buyers?
Okay, for international buyers, definitely they want, I mean, what do they want? They're looking for, if they're looking at investing, definitely they want to, they all want to buy something in the core central region, because that's where a lot of expats stay. Okay, so it's easier to find a tenant, it's easy to have turnover every year when your tenant moves out. So for international buyers, they tend to focus on the core central region. Even for own stay, they like the area. Let's say even if it's a holiday home, they still prefer to stay somewhere in Orchard or Marina Bay where, you know, it is the central of the city. And then a lot of foreigners tend to aim for units that have like, I mean, they have the affordability, they'll go for like penthouses with really good views of the bay or the sea and all.
Okay, then we are talking about high net worth foreign investors, given
That's right. That's
the
right.
so high.
Yeah. So that's right. So for local buyers, they tend to favor, I mean, most of them tend to stay in the OCR region, which is the outside core region. So most of them tend to stay near good schools or near where schools where they have to send their kid to. So local buyers tend to favor outside of core region. They don't tend to spend or stay so much in the central region because perhaps due to amenities, they prefer to stay near their family. So a lot of them will move towards the or choose a place in the suburbs.
Okay. What are the
Yep.
primary motivations for local buyers to buy? Because why I ask this question is because in Switzerland, I guess around 50 to 60% of the people here, they rent. Okay.
Oh,
And it's also very common in other countries in Europe, people rent. Especially in Switzerland, some people, they can buy, not because they cannot, but they just prefer to rent. So in Singapore, what is the home ownership percentage, and why people buy, just not thinking about renting, but just buy?
Okay. Singapore, I would say ownership rate is about 83%, so it's pretty high. And most people will want to buy. They will start with public housing because there are affordable options, which is public housing. So if you're married or you're single above 35, you can easily get like a public housing flat. So those are a lot more affordable. Most people, I would say per square meter, you could be paying maybe 5 to 6 thousand to 7 thousand for like a public flat. So it's pretty affordable, right? Per square meter, about 5 thousand to maybe 8 thousand. If it's more central, maybe 8 thousand. So it's much cheaper than a condo pricing is.
Compared to, wait, so 5,000 per square meter for public housing, and then the condo, if it's in the same region, would be around how much?
18,000.
Okay, so three, more than three times. Okay.
About three times, I would say about 2 to 3 times. Yeah, 2 to 3 times. Yeah. So, for example, let me show you an example of the around the place that I'm staying at. It's Queenstown. So, Queenstown area itself, for example, the HDBs here have actually gone up quite a lot in pricing. They are all maybe about 1 mil or 1.4. So, you see, even public housing has gone above 1 million. Okay, but the condos around here for same size could easily be maybe 2.5 to 3 million.
If the public housing is so cheap, why local Singaporeans want to buy a condo?
For facilities, I mean, at the end of the day, for HDBs and for public housing, you can only sell it after 5 years, and there's a lot more restriction. The price for public housing isn't jumping as high as private property. And for private property, you can sell to foreigners, you can sell to PRs. There's less restriction on the next buyer, you see.
But when they sell, they still need a place to live, right? So basically, the profits they make would be in the next property.
That's right. A lot of them will put that to the next property. Yeah. So that's why actually, at the end of the day, it really depends on the motivation. We do see a lot more younger Singaporeans coming out to rent. Yeah, I see a lot more who are in their 20s who actually want to rent a place because they want independence. Okay, but a lot of them end up buying because, I mean, everyone needs a roof over their head. So I would say renting in Singapore now it's getting more popular amongst younger people. But for those who are married or those who are family, they still want to own their own place.
Okay. Well, is there another reason? Because they want stability? Because why I mentioned this, because I think in Switzerland, as I mentioned, you can't easily kick your tenant out. So they can literally rent as long as they want. And in Singapore, it's free market. So maybe the owner want to sell and you have to move out. The next owner want to sell again, you have to move out. So there's a lot of unpredictabilities.
That's right, that's right. So essentially, all contracts, all rental contracts in Singapore, especially for private housing, they need to have this clause where, you know, let's say if the landlord wants to sell, the tenant needs to allow for viewing. He cannot stop the viewing. So it needs to allow for people to come and view the place. So that's why some people will still want to buy because they don't want this kind of disturbance. Like the last time I stayed in my other place, the landlord arranged for viewings every weekend, and it was very disruptive for myself, even though I'm a real estate agent. So I don't like people that keep coming to my place to view it.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, if I look at it by spending 2 to 3 times more money buying a condo, you get more facilities, right? And then the apartment appreciation might be much more than HDB, but for HDB, it's much more affordable, much more affordable. And then for someone who has equally the same amount of cash, maybe they have more liquid cash at the side, not locked into the apartment. So it's based on personal decision, right?
That's right. That's right. So it's all mainly personal decision. Maybe in some areas close to certain schools, there are not a lot of HDBs. Like for your area that used to stay in Farrer Road, it's near a top school, okay, which is Nanyang Primary. So a lot of the parents buy around there. Like the condos in the area that used to stay has gone up a lot, like crazy prices these days. Yeah. So essentially, a lot of them move because of the need for space. Sometimes HDBs, the sizing is quite limited. Or either that, they don't want to stay in a public housing. They prefer a gated community where there's facilities and also it really depends on the preference of the individual. I would say buying a public housing is a very practical, it's a very cost-saving move because what you can do is whatever that you save from paying mortgage, you can spend on holiday and all. But the thing is that the trade-off is that okay, when you want to sell, the price you have bought at may not be as high as what you had, okay, like your profit may be lesser, a lot lesser than if you had chosen a condo instead, for sure.
Okay. Is it on the assumption that, or is it common that people buy and after a few years, they sell, they move on to the next one? That's why they look into the appreciation.
Yep, it's a lot more common to do that. I recently put a video on TikTok about how I've helped my client to sell her place. She bought only for about 1.3 billion, and then recently, it's a recently completed project, so it's just ready, and then it's brand new. So I sold it off for her for about 350K of profit. So with this profit, as well as her previous down payment, she could now use it into a bigger size property because her aim was all along to, you know, use this current property more like an investment vehicle to sell it and then to buy something with her down payment and profit bigger, to buy something bigger with the profit.
Like in how many years she made 350K profit?
3 years.
Wow, crazy. Crazy market.
Yes, 350. So I mean that's basically 25% gain over a 3 year period itself. So she bought for about 1.3, sold for about 1.65, and her next one that she bought was about 2 million. But it's a really big size property. It's about 1,500 square feet. And it's got very good space for her family of you know, her husband and two kids and her maid. So that's why it fits very well for her for this next property. So this is what I do mainly. I help clients to spot opportunities and then we reuse like the profit into something else.
Right. So basically for her investment is just the initial down payment in the first property, right? Then now she lives in a bigger place.
That's right. She lives in a bigger place. So I mean, why didn't she buy the bigger place beforehand, right? The thing is she didn't have enough down payment for it. So of course we need to use we need to have leverage on one property first to make profit from it and then jump on to the next one.
Okay. My next question would be about, now we talk about buying and selling, is for the fees. What would be the transaction fees, taxes, agent fees, and other fees involved in buying and selling for either buyers and seller?
Okay. For selling side, I mean, like I charge 2%. Okay, so 2% plus good services tax, so it's about, Singapore, the GST is about 8%. So net is about 2% for selling. For purchase, right, for HDB, I charge 1%, but for private condo, I don't charge a fee at all.
To buy or to sell? To sell.
Okay, to sell, 2%, okay. To purchase, I don't charge my client any fee.
Oh, okay, how is it so? Because the fee is paid always from the seller?
Yes, so the seller's agent will split a certain percentage to me and his own agent. Yeah, because I can't expect my client to be paying me 20 grand for a two-wheel property.
How can people contact you if they are interested in investing a property in Singapore, or if some of the audience is in Singapore, if they are interested in either buying property or selling a property, how can they get in touch with you?
Oh, sure. They can check out my TikTok or they can check out my Instagram page. Okay. It's, my handle is TANUPONTEN property. So it's Tan Upon 10 property. So they can contact me through DM or WhatsApp me. Should I give my number or something like that?
Yeah, I will put your social handles in the description of this podcast. So they can
Okay. Feel free to check out my Instagram or my TikTok if they want to know more about Singapore property market. And essentially, I specialize a lot more in, I mean, especially a lot in like young parents as well as millennials who are getting their first place in Singapore.
Okay. Thank you so much, Dennis.
No worries.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.